How do you tell your children that you've got cancer? Should you tell them at all, and will they really understand what you're saying? Now, I have no idea, as chemo made me infertile before I could have children, but I know it's something that a lot of you are concerned about. So today, I'm going to answer all your questions with this week's guest. She's Caroline Leake, founder of the amazing charity Fruit Fly Collective and the Parenting with Cancer platform. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. So one of the questions I dreaded getting asked when I worked as a breast surgeon was, how do I tell my children? I don't have children of my own and I had no idea what to say. And my breast care nurses would step in and I would breathe a huge sigh of relief. But judging from all your questions this week, telling your children you have cancer can be fraught with anxiety, worry, guilt and stress. And that's the last thing you need when you're going through breast cancer treatment. This week's guest is here to help. Caroline Leake is the founder and director of Fruit Fly Collective. Now, I'm going to be honest here. That name meant nothing to me until I got breast cancer myself. And Caroline's mission at Fruit Fly is to help families talk about cancer, death and grief, and to support children of any age with the tools they need to help them cope and know they're not alone. Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, before we start with all the listeners' questions, can you tell us a bit about how you came to set up Fruit Fly Collective in the first place?
Well, I'm a scientist by background, and when I had my own children, I just was kind of perplexed that they learn all this good stuff, magnetism, you have to, but actually the kind of relevant stuff that perhaps was happening in their own families. So if their parents had diabetes, stroke, cancer, whatever, yeah. They were never being taught around that at all. And when when I was about 12, my dad died of cancer. And it was in the 80s, so, you know, the thought was just don't talk about it.
Yes.
And it was after a very short prognosis. So he was diagnosed and 6 weeks later, dead. So the idea was, oh, we just won't talk about it ever again. So, which was a great coping mechanism for me for a while, for all through my 20s. And then when I had my own kids, you know, it all kind of exploded. Yeah. And the realisation that, no, you need to talk. You can't ever run from grief. So I thought, well, let's use all the skills that I have and lots of other people's skills. And I have a sister who works in kind of cancer. And so she got me in touch with some psycho-oncologists. And we were able from there to think, right, what do we need? Let's get these. And we started doing just little toolkits and it kind of grew from there, really.
And so what does Fruit Fly do to help support families?
We do multiple things. So one thing is providing resources that help a family talk. So inside the kit for different ages, you'll find education materially around what cancer is. So it's all age appropriate, as well as education about cancer and treatment and side effects. There'll also be tools that help with emotional well-being. So that's for the children and for the parents, really, as well as kind of practical solutions and different ways a family can communicate.
Brilliant. A much needed resource. And before we get into the detail, I have to say there's a lot of love for you out there. Lucy wrote in and said that your Tiger Cloud kit was invaluable to help her tell her 9-year-old about her diagnosis. And she said having the kit on hand was so valuable as it gave them a focus for their discussion. And it made her daughter feel valued and part of the team. And she loved having something just for her. And I think getting the kids involved and just feeling like they can be a part of it makes all a bit less terrifying.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So a lot of people have asked me about how to be open with your kids, when to tell them, should you actually tell them? And it's a topic we've touched on before. The TV doctor and author Philippa Kay told us this from her own cancer diagnosis.
For anybody out there that has children doing this, young families doing this, that you have to be honest. They know something is happening. They know. You can't hide it from them, even if you're not going to hospital for 10 days. And that my children would say, Mummy, are you scared? And I would say, yes. And the reason that I think that's okay is because it allowed them to say, I'm scared too.
Yeah.
Because we were going to do the hard thing anyway, right?
I knew I was going to cry.
We were going to do the hard thing anyway.
Yeah.
But we can do it together.
Yeah. I think that's the key thing, doing it together.
Yeah. Being open.
Yeah.
And I had so many people comment on Philippa's clip saying, I don't know whether to tell my daughter or my son or not. And Claire wrote in and said that she didn't tell her 8-year-old son. And then he found out from another child in his class after they'd heard their gossipy mum talk about me. And Jessie said she'd love to know how to tell her toddlers she's got breast cancer without scaring them. So what can parents do to prepare before they actually say, I've got cancer?
We always say preparation is key, because not only does it kind of give you feel a sense of controls, but it allows you to really kind of understand what you want to say. So we often talk about it as a jigsaw puzzle. So
okay.
Think of you're just plying little bits of each puzzle piece one by one. Most children don't want a lot of information and can't process it, us even teenagers. So to be child-led. So we always say with preparation is say it out loud. Say, I have cancer out loud to the mirror, to your partner, to your friend. Because as you say, saying it out loud for the first time in front of your children is incredibly scary. We also say, maybe just write 3 bullet points. What do you want to say? Say what the doctors have said. Give a kind of an action, what's going to happen, and you can read it from that piece of paper, because children don't care if you read off a piece of paper. And often it's those first 2-3 sentences, once that's gone and out of your mouth, then the rest of it is a lot easier. We also say about props. Props Ooh. Are a really, really good idea, because not only they can help with imparting more information and understanding, but if you can hold something, if you can fiddle with something, if your gaze can be on this prop, then it kind of relieves and it doesn't make the whole thing really, really, really pressurised. So even having your phone, there's a great app called Kids Guide to Cancer, if you download that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
A book you might have got, or any kind of thing, even something like Play-Doh or Lego or something like that. To fiddle with can be really, really help you sort of kind of feel grounded really before you start those conversations.
That's great advice. And I think actually for telling anybody, whether it's your mum or your best friend, preparing it can really, really help and make it, as you said, less scary, because you're not saying it for the first time. Now, a lot of my listeners are struggling whether their children are ever too young to find out. Hannah said that she's struggling with what to tell her 3.5-year-old. She's mainly gone by the Mummy's Lump book, saying that mummy has a lump and a boobie and she's having strong medicine to make it go away. But she's worried about using the word cancer, and it would be great to get some more tips on communicating with toddlers about this. Do you have any advice for Hannah? How direct should you be when children are 2, 3 and 4?
I think you can be very direct, because
really?
They have no fear around the word cancer. To them, it's just a word. And we also talk to parents and say, maybe the 3-year-old plays with dinosaurs, so Stegosaurus, Tyrannosaurus Rex. They're long, complicated words, but they get them, they use them all the time, so actually, why not leukemia or whatever?
Yeah.
Because it's not scary, it's not a loaded word for them, and they will probably hear it, and they will question it, and think, oh, what's the difference between cancer and the lump, what's that? And so, therefore, you're clearer, and then they feel a bit more settled, so there's no confusion at all.
Yeah.
So using the word cancer is a great start, because you're not hiding anything, you're being very upfront, and if you're using any books, then often those books will have the word cancer in.
I guess being open and honest, so there's no confusion. They're not going to hear things in the school playground. That's really, really useful. One listener said they never used it with a 5-year-old because they were worried about kids at school talking about dead grandparents. Then is that going to be mum who's going to be dead? Again, you can't control what they hear, can you?
No, but you are in the main position to be able to tell them at the beginning, to talk about that your cancer is your cancer. So you can, as a parent, you could talk about how there are over 200 different types of cancer, and every cancer is different.
Yeah.
and my cancer is my cancer, and how I'm going to be treated and how I'm going to react and respond is going to be completely different from other people's. And so always have that open communication, as you say, is like the key golden kind of thing to think of.
Brilliant. Now, Laura said that her kids are 2 and 6, and they told the 6-year-old about the naughty cells in her boob. And she now says they're going to tell their 2-year-old that mummy will be tired after having an operation or chemo. But when you get into your 6, 7, 8, are there any other tips to helping children when they can understand a bit more? They might be picking up a bit more from the playground.
Yeah. And also at school, they start to do about the body.
Yeah, they do.
So we always recommend having conversation with your children and basically ask them, what would you like to know?
Okay.
So it gives them, they're empowered. They feel like they are, again, a part of the family. They're included. Sometimes we say, get a box, you know, Amazon box, decorate it. And that could be the question box. So questions often arise at really random times. So really random times when you're not prepared, or you're busy doing the washing up, packed lunches, whatever, or just too knackered to even answer. So you could say, can you write that down or draw it? Pop it in the question box, and then I will come back and have a designated time, say, not before bedtime, because obviously that's not great. But, you know, like at weekends, we can open up the question box and let's go through it all.
That's brilliant. And what about telling teachers? You might want to keep it completely private and not want anyone else to know. Is it worth telling teachers so they can pick up if the kid's behaving out of sorts, or could you keep it private?
I would strongly recommend that the teachers know.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be the whole school at all. Again, perhaps have a conversation with your children. Who do they want to know? Mm-hmm. Depending what age they are. So at primary school, the kids probably won't be particularly embarrassed, maybe in year 6 or something.
Yeah.
Secondary school, definitely ask them, who do they feel comfortable with? So for primary school children, it might be the lunchtime assistant. It's not necessarily going to be their form tutor.
Yeah.
Or it might be if they're in year 5, but actually they've got a special relationship with the year 2 teacher. And then from there, basically have a communication. So even email, if you don't want to do a face-to-face, say what's going on. Give as much information that you want to share. But the key thing is that could you look out for the child? So practical things like there might be different people going to be picking up and dropping off.
Yeah.
These are the key people, their roles, their relationship with my child and their numbers.
Yeah.
And then can you look out for my child? If there's any changes that you might see, because it's really common for children to might behave slightly different at school compared to at home. So actually teachers are really good, or teaching staff or school staff can be really key people that can recognise that maybe something's a bit troubling for your child.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about different people picking them up and dropping them off. But what about tantrums? Kids are probably more likely to react or have a fit or get stressed because of what's happening to them. How do you parent them without feeling guilty that you've caused a tantrum? Any tips on that?
Yeah, so tantrums can be toddlers, but they also can be teenagers. And the sort of
I had a few.
So the underlying sort of thing of a tantrum is emotional dysregulation. So basically they fear that something's happening. So when they're young, they can't really articulate it. They don't really know how to talk about their feelings. When they're teenagers, they're probably overwhelmed with lots of feelings. So in calm moments, to be able to recognise whatever they're experiencing, so their tantrums, they're lashing out, they're hitting you or whatever, that anger is a very common and a really normal response to something changing their life. So for toddlers, if something changed in their routine and structure can really feel massive to them. And us parents, we often think, oh, it's fine, you're just being picked up by somebody else. But to them, it's a huge thing. So try to tell them before something happens, a change happens. That can really, really help. But also don't reprimand them for the tantrum. And basically, when it's calmer, say, you know, being angry is absolutely fine. Give them permission.
Yeah.
But let's not hit mummy. Let's think of a different way. So do you have a special ball that you can take out in the garden, throw against the wall? Or here's a pad of A4 paper. Let's rip it up. Go to your bedroom and rip it up. And just being able to give them permission and know and not feel guilty about having that tantrum. And also yourself as a parent, not to feel guilty because it's what they do.
It's a way of getting out of that anger without doing anything. But coming back to teenagers, I know a lot of people have got a diagnosis when children are doing exams. GCSEs and A-levels are coming up. The last thing they want to do is tell them. It's really, really hard to know what to do in that situation. What advice would you have?
Definitely have that conversation with the school in terms of can they get, often they can have be referred deferred, that's the word.
Okay.
They can be deferred. So maybe some exam boards will allow that, so depending on what the situation and circumstances is. But the children will know what's happening or something, or they'll pick up on something that's happening. So actually not knowing can be way, way more worrying and anxiety producing than knowing. So if your child is about to have their exams, you sit down and they are suspect that something is happening, you could just start with a little bit of information. You don't have to tell them all, but you just say, this is what's happening, but I am being looked after by a whole plethora of fantastic healthcare team. And that helps them feel settled. And then say, but if anything changes, I will always tell you. So they can kind of park that worry, go and do their exams or go and have fun or go and do whatever, knowing that they will be told if anything changes.
I think it's dealing with secrets later and you kind of regret that you haven't had it. But what about if you're a moody teenager like me who might be likely just to not engage? I'm going to sulk. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to lock myself in my room. It's too much. How can you start to connect with them again when they've just switched off completely?
Yeah, this is probably one of the biggest questions that we get. Well, it's very hard to engage with somebody that doesn't want to engage, regardless of whether that's your own teenager or not. But there are a few things that you can do. One is to just gently talk about your own feelings, which might be quite a strange way of communicating. And they will look at you probably really quizzical and think, what are you talking about? But you're role modelling perhaps a way of communicating that they may pick up on. So talking about, I feel this at the moment, and this is making me do this, could potentially start for them to open up.
Yeah.
Try and find ways. There might be tiny little bits. So, for example, my teenager, it's just before bed and she just offloads. And you think, I'm desperate. I just want to go to sleep. But I'm actually allowing this space to be held for you. For some, it's driving in the car because you're not staring at each other. There's no confrontational kind of eye contact. That's often a really good way just to start talking. Never force them because they sense they know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But also have in the back of your mind, you might not be the person they're talking to, because many teenagers feel like talking to their parent is going to upset them, it's going to distress them more so. So actually they may have found somebody else to talk to. So you might be able to have that conversation or think about the trusted people in their circle. And for some, you know, some particularly boys, gaming is their network. So it's like, it's not within their social circle kind of thing. They're one removed, but they might be talking to friends in that way. Mm-hmm. It's very different from our generation.
Oh, completely. Minecraft and Roblox are the new cancer support, but I guess.
But it's about support. And it's, and it's often finding other stories. So Riprap is a place where they can go, because there's lots of stories from young people who experience parental cancer. So they just feel less alone. So they might not need to talk, but they might just need that sort of sense that that's, you know, someone else has been there.
Great. We'll definitely put links to those in the show notes. And I think it comes back to who can children talk to. One listener said that her 9 and 11-year-olds know about their breast cancer, but the mum doesn't want the wider community to know. Can she ask her children not to tell anyone but their close friends, because she doesn't want their parents gossiping about her? Or is that too much of a restriction to put on your children?
Every family deals with this differently.
Yeah.
The fact that they can go and speak to their friends, there's a couple of friends, then that's probably enough of an outlet.
Yeah.
But I would suggest sitting down as a family and saying, these are the reasons why I kind of don't want it out there yet. So given an example, say, I don't want people to look at me differently or react differently to me. So you could give an example, say, can you imagine you going into school and suddenly all your friends, you know, behaving differently, how would you feel? So I kind of don't want that. So that's giving them a reason. So there's a rationale behind why she's asking them to be, wants that privacy.
Yeah.
But obviously say, you know, the fact that you can go and talk to your friends, but we really want to keep this quiet for the moment. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And just giving them, being again, including them and making them a part of that decision making can really be helpful.
That's a really nice way of doing it. Again, making them feel they're part of it. You're not telling them. So we all know that children can ask questions that are really tough to answer. Why is the sky blue? Are ghosts real? But what happens when they ask you about your cancer? Cara and Becky said that both their daughters asked them at bedtime if they were going to get breast cancer too. And Becky said that she hadn't even considered that her daughter may have been thinking this, and it broke her heart. And one listener said she worries that her daughter may think that she caused her cancer. Any advice for navigating these difficult conversations?
Well, we always say at the beginning when you're going to have those conversations with, going to share your diagnosis with your children, is to, even if they haven't said it, is to say nothing they have done, said, yeah, or thought has caused cancer. So even teenagers can feel that. So often teenagers feel like the stress that they've caused in their parents by locking themselves in their bedroom,
yes,
has caused the cancer. Yeah. So that's one thing to reassure and kind of keep that reassurance, telling them time and time again, you know, there's nothing that you did that caused the cancer. Yeah. And then it's about having a conversation around our bodies and about how everyone is different. Mm-hmm. And just because I have cancer doesn't mean so-and-so has cancer at all. And that generally our bodies are very healthy.
Yeah.
And we have amazing, and sometimes just talking about the doctors and the scientists and the research, depending what age your children, yeah, are, is that there is this whole kind of world where they're helping people survive more. Depending on the age of your children, you can then talk about statistics and talk about survival rates and stuff like that. But just to acknowledge what they're saying, so acknowledge, go, yeah, I can imagine you feeling that and thinking that, but just because I have it doesn't mean that you have it. And generally that's all they need to know. If they're little, just that's fine. So, but you've acknowledged their feelings and always end it up saying, you know, if you've got any other questions or any worries, always come to me. But often they're just looking for a yes or no if they're that young.
Yeah, it's just that fear, and I guess the fact they've had the space to ask you that question, yeah, rather than keeping it in private, is a great thing.
And yes, just, absolutely.
It's communication, yeah, isn't it?
So for some of my listeners who are sadly facing a stage 4 diagnosis, this has got to be an incredibly tough conversation to have with their children. Shana said, I still haven't told my kids about my bone mets. I found out 2 months ago and I'm just getting a treatment plan. Now, they were young the first time around, but now I'm facing a terminal cancer and I don't know what to do. How do you tell your children when you know that your cancer can't be cured?
I think it's good to have an action plan. So don't just start the conversation and say, look, my cancer now can no longer be cured, and leave it like that, because that's quite scary for them. Yeah. So everyone, including ourselves, always knows the boundaries and structure and hope, basically. Yeah. So I think your listener are wise into think that actually I'll wait until I have the treatment plan and then I can sort of talk about it. It's easier, yeah, to talk about. So for little ones, we talk about the flower bed. So we talk about how the weeds in the flower bed are like the cancer. So the gardener has to take out the weeds in order to keep the flower bed healthy. So for secondary breast cancer, when they can appear in different parts of the body, it's like the weeds growing underground and popping up in different parts of the flower bed. And for children of that age, I'd say even up to the age of 10, it's quite a nice visual analogy. They kind of can get it. But to describe it like that, and for some children, they want to know about, you know, the blood system and the lymph system and how and why it happens. But to then talk about what's going to happen, the action plan afterwards, is a really good thing for them to know.
Yeah.
Generally, they don't want to need to know everything. They want to know the next thing. And generally, because children are self-centred, that's how they are meant to be,
yeah,
they will just look at it, well, how is it going to affect my life, you know, at that point. So during those first conversations, say, look, it has spread, but we're going to be trying to do this now, this, yeah, plan of action. These things are going to have to change. And then have these conversations like, are there anything that you really don't want to change? We can try and help that not happen. Are there things that you are willing to change? You know, football practice, da-da-da, whatever sort of thing. And then you could also talk about what's going to might happen at family at home. So energy levels. So sometimes we say put a little battery with the numbers to 1 to 5 to say, I'm on a 1 today. And underneath that 1, say, I can have a 5-minute conversation with you. You can tell me a story. Number 5, jigsaws or, yeah, trips out or whatever. And those kind of start to implement those tools and strategies. But again, it's just all about communication.
Yeah.
But also to remember that they will probably think, are you going to die? That is, yeah, a question that they will have in their heads. We often say try and prepare something,
okay,
beforehand, because little ones might say it out loud. Older ones won't, because they think it's insensitive, but they, yeah, will think it. So
or too scared to ask,
yeah,
in case they find out that it's true.
Absolutely, absolutely. So sometimes we say pro-offer it, just say most people think because it's incurable, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
But at the moment we've got this plan and I will always update you.
Yeah.
And again, they can part of that and go, okay, mum, she's just told me, so I can go off and do whatever and come back.
And I guess if you prep the groundwork, it then makes it easier.
Yeah.
When things do change. A lot of our listeners spend quite a lot of time in hospital having operations and chemotherapy. And one of our listeners, Amy, sent us this.
My chemo's making me very, very poorly. And then I've got surgery and lots of other bits to come and possibly more chemo. Any tips to help my 7-year-old? Because I've been sadly very, very unwell and in and out of hospital. It's all been very disruptive for her and out of routine and lots of people coming to stay, which has been amazing to help. But any tips to help us reconnect and to help her emotionally? She's 7. Thank you.
Yes, so one of the things that really can help in these situations, and again, it's about sort of managing their own expectation, the child's expectation, and giving them a little bit of control and power. Because children generally don't have much control, really. They're controlled by parents or school. So actually, when a cancer diagnosis in the mix as well, a lot of that, even their tiny little bit of control has gone. So giving that back in the form of, so if she's 7, then a daily timetable is a great thing. Okay. So stick it up on the fridge, get a piece of A4 paper, dividing up the day, morning, afternoon, evening, mm-hmm. whatever. And then putting down what she needs to do. So she needs to have breakfast, get dressed, whatever. And then have so-and-so's going to be taking you to school. And then you're going to be at school, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So-and-so's picking you up from school. Then after school, you might be going to grandma's, da-da-da-da-da. And then in the evening, clean your teeth, da-da-da. So she can go up and she can look to see what her day looks like and put them in a little, you know, cut them out so you can be moved about and you'd have to write it out every day. So every day she knows where she is, because the aim is to provide that structure that might have gone and those boundaries, because children thrive on boundaries.
Yeah.
And so to have that, to put that back in, even if it has gone, that's fine. You can start getting that back in.
Yeah.
And including her as well. She can write down what's important to her and then, right, we're going to really try hard. If swimming is important to you, we're going to really try hard to keep those swimming lessons.
Yeah.
But sometimes they might, you know, might not be able to make it, that sort of stuff. If you're feeling really like you can't, you know, be up on your feet and you're going to be in bed, lying on the sofa, the art of being on the sofa or parenting from bed is preparation. When you're feeling that tiny little bit stronger.
Yeah.
Prepare a box and shove a load of things that they like doing. So it might be sticker, activity books, da-da-da, snacks, whatever. Yeah,
like a chemo caddy, but
yes, exactly.
Look after your children.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
that.
When you are lying on in bed, she can come up and she can have her own book, or she's like, should we get the box out? Because the box is exciting. And then you can say to one of your friends, do you know what? Can you be in charge of updating the box? So there's new things on there. Giving someone else a little bit, you know, delegating that role or task. And that can be a really nice thing. And or just watching TV together, watching stuff together, can be a really great way of just connecting, reconnecting, and allowing her to help as well. So most children want to help and they just feel very, very helpless and powerless. So again, another thing is to say, what can you do around the house to help me? So if she's 7, then it could be, can you do the dishwasher? Unload the dishwasher.
Uh-huh.
Or it could be, can
I
you...
Only husbands could do that. Sorry.
I don't know. Actually.
I can't do it properly. It has to get reloaded when I pack my...
But things like, you know, can you match the socks, pair up the socks, those kind of things. Like if it doesn't get done or if it gets done badly, it doesn't really matter. But she's a part of the household and she's a part of that. And even sometimes, do you want to do some fundraising? So do you want to fundraise for a cancer charity? Because, you know, every parent loves a sponsor silence.
Oh,
or
yes.
A cake sale or something like that, where they feel like they're contributing and they're part of it and they're connecting with you. It's finding things that they like doing and setting aside. And we often say to parents, it doesn't have to be 20 minutes. It can be 2 minutes. And often set a timer, because you can say to them, during this timer, I'm all for you. You know, we can do anything you want. We can pretend to be cats. You can put makeup on me or whatever. But once that time is gone, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go back to bed.
The one more rule doesn't work.
No.
One more bedtime story. Well, that's some great tips there. I hope that's helped you, Amy.
I've had a question about hair loss. Now, we had a whole episode on this earlier in the season, but Parnsy got in touch to say that she's got 3 kids, aged 7, 12 and 14. Now, she's halfway through chemo and they know she's lost her hair, but she doesn't want them to see her bald. And she's asked, what is your advice on this? How can you get them to embrace the bald hair and not be scared?
Does she know that they are going to be scared? Because sometimes it's our perception of actually it's going to scare them, they're fearful around it, and many kids aren't. But, I mean, doing fun things. So for some parents, they have chosen hats together, scarves together, gone on, like the 14-year-old might be going, you know, do a scarf tying session together, coming along to different kind of charities that offer those services.
I had a friend put tattoos, temporary tattoos on my bald head, covered me in butterflies and skulls and things.
So there's beauty there, isn't it? Yeah, so that sort of thing. So they can have tattoos over their arms while if she has tattoos on the head. And so again, it's about including them and it's about preparing. So if they do, if she does feel like, oh, me, you know, suddenly showing the bald head is going to be scary. There are, so there's Nowhere Hair book.
Yes.
Or you could even get like a Cindy doll. No, it's not Cindy.
Is it Barbie?
Barbie. And cut all that hair off. I mean, it's not going to completely bald. But you could just have it as a, quite a fun kind of, not to dismiss what's happening or anything, but to make it like, oh, what do you think Barbie looks like? Yeah. And then you could talk about hair, what's its functions? So it's like, oh my God, like the eyebrow loss, you know, all of that. And then you could think about, what about when it grows back? Is it going to be curly, do you think?
Or all these colour, green eyebrows and blue eyelashes. Yeah, make fun of it.
Yeah, and be creative. Yeah. So we used to do iron filings, you know,
filings. Yeah, yeah.
So we drew a head and it was a bald head and then we put iron filings on and then we got the kids to move the iron filing so it was became bald again and put it back on, made, you know, all those kind of things. Yeah. So there's lots of different ideas that you could try and embrace. And once you get there, then you'll see that your kids will be right in it.
Brilliant tips. Thank you. I think finally, I want to talk about how you cope as a parent after telling your children. So Lisa, Kate and Sharing Stuff Through Cancer all want to know how to cope with the mum guilt. Those fleeting moments of sadness at everything you're putting your children through. And one listener said her son was 5 when she was diagnosed and she still worries about how it might have affected him 5 years later. And it's even harder for single parents. Yeah. What advice do you have for the women and men listening to cope when they feel they're breaking their children?
Well, guilt is part and parcel of being a parent, regardless of what your health or illness are. But first of all, give yourself a break. So to think that actually you haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
The fact that you've got cancer doesn't mean that you have, you know, purposely got cancer in order to break up the family or whatever. Understanding that actually that children are resilient. I loathe to sort of really say that sentence because it really annoys me, but they kind of are. They are very much in the present, so they don't think like adults in terms of like thinking back and I've you know, the impact of me having cancer caused this to happen or this happened. They very much sort of live, and as long as they are involved, as long as they are have security, and the security comes from being loved and having boundaries and being informed. Once you have those three things in place, then they are kind of set up and they're going to be all right. If they know they can come and talk to you or maybe another trusted adult, so if you're a single parent, you will have to do the heavy lifting, of course. But if you have that open relationship, then actually it can be really rewarding and for them to see. And they might have to do things like grow up a little bit faster. They might have to do tasks that generally or have responsibilities that you wouldn't have necessarily given to them at such an early age. But there's no evidence to suggest that them having those responsibilities or tasks earlier is detrimental to their upbringing. And for some people, you know, it kind of gives them a sense of responsibility. And a lot of parents talk about, oh, it's ruining their innocence. I don't get that, really. I think that they want to, you know, every family deals with something. And if it's not cancer, it's something else. Yeah. And actually, children, again, if they just feel loved and secure, then they will be okay.
It all comes down to communication, doesn't it?
It does.
Thank you so much, Caroline. I really hope you've helped our listeners. Before you go, can you let us know about any helpful resources that we can direct anyone listening to?
Yes. So if you go to parentingwithcancer.org, so it's a whole website that's got tons and tons of stuff there. So there's resources. So there's all the things that I've been talking about, the daily timetables and all of that, they can be just downloaded for free there. So that's fine. There's lots of workshops on different topics. So supporting neurodivergent kids, talking about pre-bereavement, all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. And then there's all the resources that we've talked about, the apps and the fantastic different organisations that also help parents or children. Yeah. So they're all listed there. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is an amazing charity. So if you're facing end of life, then perhaps having support around that and your children.
Mummy Star?
Mummy Star is fantastic. Yeah. So if you are pregnant and you've been diagnosed, and often those families already have children themselves, they are a wonderful, wonderful organisation.
And Fruit Fly, of course.
Oh, and Fruit Fly, yes.
Save the best to last.
So we also have another website called pipskit.com, and that deals with incurable cancer, or sort of more if you're in palliative care and helping children. So there's lots of coping techniques. There's lots of different tools and strategies you can use, as well as information and how to support and talk to your children if your cancer is incurable and then you become in palliative care.
They sound incredible. I'm going to put all of that in the show notes. And we've also filmed this episode. So if you haven't already been to my YouTube channel, I recommend you check it out so you can see me and Caroline in full HD. Thank you so much for joining me today, Caroline. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Caroline Leake from the Fruit Fly Collective, and I can't thank her enough for sharing her wisdom and experience to help you tell your children something you thought they'd never need to hear. The takeaway for me is that it's all about the preparation, working out what you want to say, and having props like dolls or books just to help you explain what's going on, and it sounds like that can make everything just a little bit easier. Please do go and have a look at the Parenting with Cancer website for more tips and tricks. You'll find all the details in the show notes. And now it's time for the lovely Donna Ashworth to read us our poem of the week from her best-selling book, Wild Hope.
Tiny fingers. I can still feel tiny fingers wrapped around my thumb and the brush of little lashes on my cheeks. It seems but scarce a moment since I held you in one arm and rocked you back and forth to help you sleep. I remember wobbly steps as you fought to stand up tall, the joy of each success bright in your eyes. I remember all the monsters I banished from your bed, how I'd be the one to soothe you when you cried. I'm still that mum who worries if your life is going well, if I've raised you with enough to have it all. But if truth be told, my darling, it's just love I want for you, and the wonder that you had when you were small. And you fly so very high, higher than I ever did, and that, my love, is just how this should play. In my mind, you'll always be tiny fingers round my thumb, and I'll rock you there until my dying day.
That was Donna Ashworth reading Tiny Fingers from her latest book, Wild Hope. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems, or find out about today's guest, Caroline Leake, and the Fruit Fly Collective, or you've got a question you want me to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. And you can also sign up to my podcast newsletter for bonus monthly tips. And if you did love this episode and have a few moments to spare, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen. Now, next week's episode is all about radiotherapy with Joe and Naman from RadChat. And judging by the questions you've already sent me, it's going to be a good one.
We have patients who are running marathons whilst they're undergoing radiotherapy. There are other people who actually have been working all their lives, and actually during radiotherapy, they are really struggling emotionally and physically, you know, and they choose not to work. They choose not to necessarily go out and socialise as they would usually. I think everyone has their own way of coping.
I'm Dr. Liz Reardon. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you then. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.